My name is Owen Thompson, the Local Journalism Initiative. This following interview is with Scott Porteous, Frank Russo, and Mike Payne. They are three comedians on their first comedy tour post-pandemic. The DIY comedy tour first started in Western Canada, with them crisscrossing throughout the provinces. They are starting the second leg of their tour in September and will be going through Ontario. All three comedians have a history within the Canadian comedy scene. Porteous has been in the comedy scene for 20 years, with his onstage persona, Herbert Henry's, making it onto Canada's Got Talent in 2022. While Payne is a tiny bit newer compared to Porteous, with just over 5 years of comedy experience within Toronto. Russo, on the other hand, has been in the indie scene for just under 10 years. Having lived across Canada, he has been involved in many different comedy scenes. We talk about their careers and a few road stories in their first leg of the tour, with a few hints of what's next to come on the DIY comedy tour.
Let's start with a brief introduction of each of you. So we'll start off from the top here. So Scott, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure thing. I'm Scott Porteous. I've been doing comedy for almost 20 years. I've been doing many tours. This will be my 15th tour, actually. The DIY comedy tour has been number 15. I've been at a big comedy festival. I got to perform on Canada's Got Talent. And a lot of different proud things to be on.
Oh, hey, I'm Frank Russo. Been doing comedy for about 10 years. I've run shows in Halifax, Toronto. I've lived all over Canada. Performed in the LOL Festival for Sudbury, World Series of Comedy, and I've performed at various clubs and whatnot.
I'm Mike, Mike Payne. I've been doing comedy for about 6.5 years, almost 7. I'm from Toronto. I live in Mississauga now, so kind of the same thing. Yeah, I love comedy.
So you three are currently doing the DIY comedy tour, or the upcoming DIY comedy tour. So how did you three all meet?
Well, I met Frank a long time ago, just to be on the road doing a show, I think it was Thunder Bay. And then Mike, I actually met through an online writing platform called The Comedy Workshop during the pandemic, and we just kind of like touch base since.
Well, you started that. He started the workshop. It was kind of a big deal because we didn't have any comedy at all during different parts of the pandemic, other than online stuff. And everyone was like, "Ooh, online." So he created this really cool workshop that allowed us to have a given topic every week, and we'd have to write 4 minutes on it, and then we could obviously share that with everybody, and then we'd have another chance to do another set of our own material afterwards. So that was a really, really valuable thing. And that is how I met Scott. I met Frank in Toronto because Frank has lived all over this country, this beautiful, beautiful nation we live in. Lived in Toronto. Well, he's actually originally from sort of Toronto, Brampton. And so the last time that he lived here, he used to run a show called Blackjack Barbecue, was it? No, it wasn't. It was Triple A.
Triple A Rib Split and Comedy, bud.
Triple A Rib Split and Comedy. And that was fun because it was actually pretty close to my house too. I could walk up to it, and it was a good way to get to know some people.
Yeah, I met Scott at a festival, and I met Mike in Toronto, and I was also one of those people who thought online comedy was gross and just avoided it.
Yeah, most people thought that way. Most people thought that way, but it's the thing that kept me sane for a while. And there were a handful of good shows too. There were even some with really high production value where they had like 3D, metaverse style characters, and they'd introduce the show and turn around the camera and you'd see their screen, but it's like a 3D character in front of a 3D screen but with everybody's face on it. It was kind of cool. But yeah, most of the online comedy was not stand-up, what I would call stand-up comedy.
All three of you, I guess you've all known each other for a decent amount of time now.
Yeah.
Have you guys worked with each other before this comedy tour?
Oh yeah.
I work with Frank. I've been on with a couple of tours with Frank. So I know Frank on the road a little bit. I think he went to like the West a couple times. But for Mike, we've been on tour for the first time. We worked together the first time in May. So May or August.
We did the first part of our tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. May. We went to the West. So yeah, that's the first time I worked with Mike.
Now that you're actually able to go back out on the road again after all the restrictions are gone, or what's it like for all three of you to be working with each other?
That's pretty great, I'd say. We did the first part of our comedy tour back in May, as he said, We did 17 dates in 20 days. I don't know. I can't tolerate anybody for longer than a few days, especially if they're family. With these guys, it was a breath of fresh air. I wasn't sure. I knew Scott more personally, I guess, than I did Frank, because we hadn't really talked beyond comedy. But getting into the car with these guys was actually really easy for the most part. We all burn out towards the end. That's just what happens when you're doing so much so quickly with a couple people you're not used to. But ultimately, very easy to work with. We really found our rhythm by about, I guess, halfway through that section. And now we've got, you know, a good, was it 19 dates in 20 days now, or 18 dates, something like that, for the second year of the tour. Yeah, so that was out west, and now this one's Ontario, and we're hoping to go into, well, we're going to go back to British Columbia for a short run in December, and then we're going to go to Eastern Canada for spring of next year, and follow up in BC and Alberta for fall of next year. That's the plan anyway.
Any conflicting opinions about this from Scott or Frank?
No. I was actually, I totally agree with what Mike was saying. It's like be on the roads with your best buds. You know, sometimes you don't. I didn't, like I said, with Mike, I had a personal idea of who he was. It really helped too. We have a lot in common in that way. And you know, like you said, there's gonna be some collision a little later. But like, you know, anybody, if you're on the road with somebody for 3 weeks, you're gonna find something to hate. But overall, it was a great experience, and I did it. I mean, we're doing it again, right? And it's like you're being on the road with your buddies, you know what I mean? And it's a bonding experience, and I'm glad that I found the right people to travel with, because sometimes it doesn't matter how talented or how funny someone might be. It's if you don't get along like a few days after traveling, it's gonna be difficult. But these guys, no problems at all. Love them.
I was gonna say, getting the smell of three middle-aged men out of your car isn't great, but other than that, no complaints.
Especially when we didn't shower in Bredenbury and I hadn't showered since Toronto, which was my bad. So that was 4 days of musk, you know, undercarriage musk. You know, in terms of like conflict resolution or anything like that, because you know, there's gonna be bound to be something that pops up that annoys somebody. I know this about Scott, that if he's in trouble, that I can just put out my hand and a piece of lemon poppy seed loaf will magically appear in it. Baked goods. Yeah. When you're not being a ghost at 4 o'clock in the morning,
I buy bringing us a baked goods,
putting a freaking, oh my God. So we stayed in a couple of nefarious places. You know, it's still Canadian, so not too nefarious anyway. There's no gunfire in the background. We stayed in a place called Fruitvale outside of Selmo when we played there. And we stayed at the worst hotel I've ever been in, ever. Like, and that's a lot of hotels. And none of us really like to sleep next to another person in bed. Even at home, sometimes I'll sleep on the couch if I'm having a restless night. So Scott was odd man out this night. So we had two beds, and then we had Scott on the floor, right? I wake up at 4 a.m. to go pee, because that's a normal thing for a man who's over 40. And somehow Scott had figured out in the middle of the night that he was sleeping on a very stained, gross floor. So he got up and decided to sit in a chair. Now, that would, you know, to sleep, that would be fine normally, you know, just kick up your feet on the end of somebody's bed, lean back on this thing. But no, this was a mid-back chair, swivel chair. And so he decided that in order to sleep in this, that he was going to get that, you know, that felt blanket that every hotel room has, that felt blanket. And he grabbed it, and this was a bright yellow felt blanket. And he took it and put it over himself and then held it so that his head would not fall back. And so I woke up to a yellow ghost at 4 a.m. I had to register that there was a yellow ghost in the room. But not only that, he positioned himself in between the two beds, and I was at the far bed from the bathroom. So I registered this. I had to get up, and I had to physically move him out of the way.
I have photographic evidence.
I have conflicting reports. However, I will respect the interview and hold my tongue.
Speaking of, you know, I guess yellow ghosts, bad hotels, and the smell of traveling and all that, what are some of the difficulties of doing these, I guess, these tours of like with constant travel?
Well, I definitely would say planning. I mean, there's like we've got a situation where we planned the show, and because they weren't because it was during, I can't remember what, that was a long weekend, but they were concerned about like a lot of sales, which is it's very stressful for a promoter because a lot of our sales aren't online. They're people buy at the door last minute. And it's so frustrating because you can't plan that. You can't prepare for that. Like you can put all the advertising, you can put all the promoting, you can do word of mouth, social media, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of people won't buy tickets online. And it's, I mean, people, some people do, don't get me wrong, but like a lot of talents, they didn't. And it was so, you don't know what to expect. So that was a little stressful. And we had one show that like didn't want to take that chance. And they actually canceled on us like the week of. So we had like, we lost money, not because of, because people got their tickets, their money back, but we lost money in advertising. We paid for specific advertising. So we learned about contracts right away. For me, that's about the one thing that stands out is just the preparation and the not knowing what to expect.
And Frank, for yourself, was there any like difficulties that maybe haven't been highlighted?
Yeah, these two snore like crazy, which means I can't sleep half the time.
Yeah, especially me.
And then I just drive like a zombie for the rest of it.
He's just nervous. He you know, he sleeps with a knife under his pillow, as is the Bramptonian way.
With that difficulty in planning, you know, shows being potentially canceled, were there any other issues that maybe people won't understand or don't really think of when they think of like, oh, difficulties with the show?
Oh, I was going to say, we're smart enough now to bring our own gear with us, but a lot of the venues will tell you they're set up for a comedy show, and then you get there and find out that they have, like, the world's tiniest speaker and a unpowered microphone. It's like, that can kind of throw you off.
It's a stage without a spotlight half the time.
That too, yeah.
Yeah, we did take a lot of audio equipment with us, but we didn't have any lighting, but we did have a background as well, which helped quite a bit. And luckily, most of the places were at least well lit enough that it was fine. But a spotlight is a pretty key ingredient to our mix anyway. I think in terms of difficulties, yeah, I think that whole venue pulling out during the tour kind of sucked. But we've covered that base by creating contracts, which did lose us a couple venues. But it's like, you know, I think we dodged a bullet there. Mm-hmm. They were probably just holding until they got a better booking or what they thought was a better booking. Yeah. And if anybody like our basic. You know, agreement, basic contract. If anybody balks at it, it's like, why? What? We're just trying to, you know, cover our expenses and everything else. I think a big surprise was probably the amount of money we spent on food.
Yeah, though. Food and gas for sure.
Yeah, food and gas is pretty, especially gas right now. But food was like $1,400 a person because we were eating out the whole time because we didn't have a vehicle large enough to have a thermos in it. Yeah, a cooler. That's a good way to put it. But also, yeah, the gas was just insane. I don't know what the total was offhand, but it was very, very, very high. So the tour made money. We all made a little bit of money, but a lot of it went to living when you're out there.
I feel like with the Ontario stretch, it's not going to be as bad for gas because the lack of mountains.
Well, that's not true. we have a fair number of really long drives ahead of us, and it doesn't care whether it's a mountain or not. It's going to be, you know, fairly expensive gas wise. The one advantage is, you know, we'll be in and around my place, so we'll be able to avoid some accommodation expenses and stuff like that. You know, in Frank's parents' place, I guess, is pretty close by. But yeah, we'll be able to have more home base time, which will save us a bunch of money in this particular case. I hate to say it, but a lot of it becomes money focused when you are on the road because, you know, people are used to paying, what was it, like $15 tickets, $20 tickets, maybe a lot of the time, but they don't want to go beyond that. The venues tend to feel a lot less responsibility towards the tour than we do, which is fairly obvious, right? Our expectation, I think, going in for a lot of the venues is that they'd give us more backup, they'd give us more advertising help and everything else. And some of them did, like a fair number of them did, but a bunch of them didn't too. And so we went into those scenarios that Scott was describing where it's like, we don't know what it's going to be like in this particular case. Luckily, we sold out the shows. That was pretty good.
Who was the guy who didn't know how to make a Facebook event?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I don't want to name names. I don't want to name names. I think that was in Kimberley. No, that wasn't
it. They're really nice.
No, Kimberly.
No, it wasn't Kimberly.
No, it was, yeah. It was the one where Scott's friend came.
Okay, all right. That's okay. You don't need to talk about that.
We're not?
Please.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So, avoiding Scott's friend, how did this tour come about?
Thank you so much, Paul. I know it was Cloud Talk for a while. Like, I know I talked about it with Mike. Like, we wanted to do something, and it just sort of like we put things into practice, right? So just for the longest time, it was just, you know, just talking. Probably like a year before the pandemic ended, something like that. And then we just kept them talking about it, kept in touch, and then
yeah, you were mentioning that you were going to go with Frank again at the time, but that you'd include me in a future tour, which was really nice. And I never expected anything to come of it. But then you came back to me like a few months later and we started planning it, mm-hmm. You know, and we each bring our own individual tertiary skills to this as well. And, you know, Scott does a fair amount of the, like, I'd say 99% of the booking itself and the searching and everything else, which is a pain in the butt. I do all the graphics and the website and all that stuff. And Frank does road management. So he does, he did all the driving on the last one, which will be probably split between he and I this time. Live and learn, right?
Road management is probably the nicest way I've ever heard. He drives. So road management is the most professional way I've ever heard someone say that he drives.
Well, it's not just that.
No. But you also, you set up the sound system, you set up the shows and stuff like that. Yeah.
You do all the audio and you're always there, like actually setting up the shows at the beginning, you know, which allows me to go and smoke cigarettes and ignore you guys.
You keep us in check pretty much.
But also we're all doing social media stuff towards it. You know, it's not any of our favorite thing to do, but it's absolutely necessary these days. That's why it's like I was expecting a larger response when I said I did the social media marketing schedule earlier, and I was very disappointed.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. It's a schedule. It's got things on it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's half of the schedule. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Getting into a comedy tour is like a pretty big deal. Is there like anything like in your like personal life that you've kind of had to like put on pause because going on these long stretches of just going on the road and doing these shows?
For me, employment.
Yeah, me too. Like, we both don't have a day job during tours, but Frank's managed to work his into the tour as well because he's got a remote job.
If you don't mind me asking, what do you guys do or did before the tour?
I pretty much did just the serving, a lot of serving or retail stuff, but like,
but you also are a background actor.
Actually, I do background acting for the strikes or slowing that down. But yeah, by background acting, I mean, like I showed up in a, actually, yeah, that's what it is. Background acting. Yes. Yes.
That's literally what it's called. Yeah. You're an extra on film and television. Yes. I've also done a little bit of acting, not in a little while, but I did a Burger King commercial a little while ago, and then I split it up between doing graphic design, web design, and house painting during the day because I've done that for a very long time. It's just good to fill in the blanks with because this is partial income, not a full income. And Frank, what'd you have?
I do project management for a software company.
So it's a wide variety of careers. So what exactly got all three of you into comedy?
A friend of mine died of cancer and I wrote 5 minutes in the next few months before going and performing it at Yuck Yucks for the first time. Because I figured if I was going to do it once, I'd better do it on the big stage, right? Just to try it. That got me into it and I was hooked right away. What about you, Scott? It's a long time ago, I know.
Oh, man. Well, I was being polite and waiting for everybody else. That's all. I had a lot of reasons. It's like layers, but like I guess one of the core reasons is I love the craft of a joke, and like the way it's structured. Like I remember watching Just for Laughs as a kid and seeing the same joke, but still appreciating this as much kind of thing because I always had a fascination and love for comedy. And it's one of the few things that I'm not the worst at. So I just kind of kept doing that, and all of a sudden, 20 years later, I'm still trying to make a living off of it.
I've always been a big fan of comedy, and then one summer, my friend kept hassling me about trying it, and then one day I came in and was like, fine, if you can book something, wow, I'll go do it, and then I found out the next day she used to manage bands. So I was on like a bunch of shows the next week. Yeah, not the best. Didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it where I live because I was like, I didn't want my friends to see me doing this. So she booked me something that was like 4 hours away in Toronto. And then if I can give anyone advice, don't do that because you're just driving to your own funeral for like 3.5 hours.
What were some of the difficulties with starting out? It's interesting that you describe it as driving to your own funeral.
Yeah, well, you have no idea what's going to happen, and you just assume it's going to go badly.
That's in the beginning.
One of the, I think, the hardest ones was, I think, like, I was doing comedy for about a year before I told anybody that I was actually doing it. The first show that I ever brought a girl to watch me do it at, I think I got, like, 45 seconds into my set, blanked on everything because I was nervous that girl was there, and then just put the mic down and exited stage.
Speaking of starting out, is there any, like, material that you look back on now as, like, being probably like one of the worst jokes you've ever told that you regret ever telling?
Oh, that's like a weekly for me.
Just his life choices every week.
I don't know, it depends. My Facebook posts are like that too, to be honest. I don't delete as often as I used to. That's a good sign. But I think that's like a common thing for, like, I mean, you have to figure out, you have to have those moments where it's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that kind of thing, and learn from it. I think a joke I used to have, and I hate it now, and it goes well when I did. I hate it because it's one of those things where it's like it started the trajectory of like me doing quote unquote the contest set, where it's like the same 10, 15, 20 minutes that I was comfortable with for like years and years. It put me into this black hole of like the same jokes. So I just regret doing that, being that comfortable and not being comfortable enough to like try new things.
The showcase set can be a bit of a crutch for a lot of people. You know, you get your best, you know, your killer 6 minutes and go with it forever. That can be really tough. I think we all deal with saying things that we probably regret in the beginning of our careers more over than now. Because, you know, new comics say the most dumbest stuff imaginable. It's next level dumb to us now. You know, because we'll watch it and we'll be like, yeah, oh, cringe. And half the cringe is because we've done similar things in the past.
I was never an edgelord or anything like that. I started mostly safe and then just got progressively more risque as time went on.
Right. So you're saying that you're emotionally healthy. I like to throw stuff out and see how it does and then go from there. But a lot of the time it's successful anyway these days.
I don't know. I've always, like, with the edgelord remark, I feel like if you have a point, then I can respect it. But like, if you're just saying something just for the reaction, I just never been, I don't know. If you're just trying to get like the shock value or just like, I mean, if you have like a shock value within a whole bit, that's one thing. But if that just all you want to do is get that one, that, oh, I'm going to get a response. They're going to love, like, oh, like, I'm going to be a punk rock comic or whatever. It's just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of the whole like shock for the sake of shock.
You're talking about edgelords, like what he was describing before.
Yes. Yes, it was. I just want to give my two cents. That's all.
I just want to coin a new phrase. Punk rock comics.
I don't know. When I was in Sudbury on more than one occasion, someone would like try and fight you afterwards. And I always was like,
oh, really? Not
interested in that part.
That's funny.
some of the stuff people were hollering at each other at an open mic, you could see why. But yeah.
Yeah, in Toronto,
I was always happy to watch.
Yeah. In Toronto, starting out, you don't get any book shows at all. I mean, like, you can try for the proams, which is where I started, the Yuck Yucks proam night, professional amateur slash. But in Toronto, you know, you're doing 8 shows a week, but they're all open mics, and that's all other comics sitting there waiting their turn, looking at their notebooks or their phones or whatever, talking to their buddies in the far background, you know, so you deal with just not getting anything from people half the time, you know, unless you say something really interesting and it gets people, or you have, you know, perfect delivery from day one. That's what I had. It's a meat grinder. And then you get to start to do book shows. Like, I think I had my first book show probably 2 months in, and, you know, that was after doing 80 open mics. Yeah, and I did okay with the material that I had at the time, and I thought I did pretty well. But, you know, I look back at it and it wasn't that great. But also, Toronto audiences can be really fickle. So you know, it's very, I find when I leave Toronto to do comedy, people are far less, oh, that's a joke. Is it okay? Yes, it is. And now I'm laughing. It's more like, oh, it's a joke. Funny. Ha! You know, like you skip a step in there and people are much more open to it. But that being said, I wouldn't trade, you know, starting in Toronto for anything because of the frequency, but also because you get through that bombing, terrible feeling from bombing, you know, very quickly because it happens so often in the beginning.
So we've been talking a lot about the difficulties and the hardships of, you know, being a comedian, of the comedian lifestyle. Are there any like positive moments, like some real like moments you're really proud of with the first leg of the tour?
Oh, validation for sure. Whenever like when you work hard for something and you see it happen, like we had like 7 or 8 sold out shows. That was amazing. That was proud right there, because that's something like you put your work into something and you see it pay off. There's no other words to describe it.
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
I like meeting people and going new places. I'm moving to Nacusp. We found that place on the last tour, and if you ever get the chance, go. It's the most beautiful place on earth.
Are you still going to move there, or are you just talking? It is the most beautiful place that we went to in the Kootenai Mountains.
Just don't tell everybody though. We're trying to keep it a secret.
Right, it's the worst place on earth. Don't go visit.
Don't publish this
off the record.
Yeah, Nacusp is incredible because you're at the top of mountains and you look around and it's mountains in all directions. And then there's a big, huge, like a lake. It's really a reservoir that goes up and down by 100 feet a day. And there's otters in the water.
It's the Columbia River.
Like it's so sunny all the time too. And the people are nice for the most part. Yeah, I'd say we had a great experience there. And we had a great opener there, Joe. She was great. She gave us free vegan breakfast the next morning, awesome. And we all enjoyed it.
With this tour, I guess you go around and you meet a lot of people. Was there any, like, so far, because you've only done the West Coast so far, and you mentioned one place already, but were there any other places in the West Coast that you remember, like, so vividly as, like, the best place you've been?
Kimberly was nice. The owner, I feel bad because I remember the name of the owner at the moment, but he's a super nice dude. Michael, thank you. Yeah,
That's the Kimberly Elks Club, by the way. That it was fantastic. He had inherited this, I guess this branch of the Elks Club from somebody, and they had an old bowling alley in the basement. Like I'm talking old, yeah, where you have to go and physically redo the pins yourself. And he turned it in, like he zhuzhed it up and made it all on this beautiful like. I guess mid-century modern theme with the old bowling stuff that he'd been collecting forever. It's just a beautiful, beautiful basement there, but also the event space was fantastic. And he was just very accommodating. And that was one of
one of those things I'm saying, like it's the part of the traveling, but it's like the hidden gems, is like the sights we get to see, like, or the people, and not just like in terms of like being there. It's like the personableness, like the connection, like Danilo, Sonia, this is an amazing person. That was a lot of fun too. And the Danilo bar,
Is Salmo the brewing one?
Yeah, Erie Creek Brewery. Brewing.
Yeah,
Elk Brewery, whatever it's called. Yeah,
Erie Creek Brewery. Yeah, it's got the elk on the sign. Yeah, if you go to that town, it looks like there might be 8 people who live here, but then it was showtime and they packed that place out. It was a great place.
It actually looks like the set for a Western.
Yeah,
like there should be a tumbleweed going across the center there, but then there's mountains and green and everything else. It is just the way it was set up with like those big wraparound porches and the second story verandas everywhere. It just felt very like, are we in Canada right now? It's really cool. Are we in Canada? This is weird. That was a great show.
It's just so closely hidden gems that you wouldn't even think of it.
A lot of the owners are fantastic. A lot of any of these owners that we met, almost all of them were 100%. Great and very accommodating, and put extra effort into, you know, either providing more food and beverage or getting the name out, getting the word out. A lot of them did reviews for us as well. So that was really nice. They have no responsibility to that. Yes, and our sponsors. We had 4 sponsors on this tour.
I found specifically the people that don't get comedy shows, like they were more into it than, like, you know what I mean? Like if someone is used to getting shows, it's one thing. And we do appreciate the time, but like people who aren't used to it, like smaller communities or smaller towns or just places that don't have shows, they're way more like into it because they never had it. Like Cranbrook's example too. They were really.
Cranbrook was the first event at that venue, though, and we sold it out, so they were super thrilled.
It's a bowling alley. I don't know what it was now. It's
Oh, yeah. That was great. That's what's that called? It's a brewery, but it's half brewery and half.
Encore Brewing.
Well, it's half bowling alley, half brewery. And if they sat it properly, we could have
Encore,
had like
yeah, great place.
220 people in that space. It's really big. There were a couple issues, but yeah, we weren't just the first comedy act. We were the first live acts that they'd ever had. And they were planning on having
They were
weekly
all
events
learning.
from there on. But we gave them a long list of the things that they could do a little better, and they were very, very receptive to it. And it wasn't that we had a bad time. We had a good time. It just was, a new venue that doesn't know how to do this yet. Yeah, and they had really good Indian food there, surprisingly, in Cranbrook, British Columbia, up in the
Yes.
mountains.
Is the DIY Comedy Tour your first tour post pandemic?
I did a couple because after I did the Canada's Got Talent, I sort of milked that teat, if you will, and I did some shows 2 weeks. I did a 2 week stretch in the summer, trying to go to on the way to Medicine Hat, and then I did another one for the Nanaimo Fringe Festival. And on the way there, I booked shows because it would be cheaper to book rather than take a flight to Nanaimo, where I live. So yeah, that was by myself though, which is hard to do. So that was, but that's the first time I was introduced to Nacusp. And that's where I mentioned to the guys, and that was like my favorite show I've ever done because I felt they treated me like a rock star, which I've never felt that way. But I did, that's all I did. It was just first by myself. Yeah, that was the first on the way toward. But like in terms of like with people, yes, that would be after the pandemic.
All right, that's actually all of my questions. So, do you guys have any final comments you'd like to leave off on?
Yeah, buy some tickets. Buy some tickets and come to a show. We got a ton of shows coming up all over Ontario, and you'll get to hear the Winnipeg accent over there, and you get to boo a Torontonian. That's fine. I don't care. It's like sunlight for Superman. I just take it in. It fuels me every day.
What can we be expecting on this last leg of the or the second leg of the tour?
We get a variety of acts. That's a big thing. We our three acts slash four acts, because Scott plays a character as well as himself. Herbert Henry's from his Canada's Got Talent credit, which is a comedy dangerous. He invites people on stage and has them throw things or do something while he tells some corny jokes. It's pretty great. And then there's Scott's side of things, which is, just Scott telling us his story as well. And then there's, Frank style, which is much more, I would say, observational, classic writer comedian. And mine is more absurdist and some shock, but can be family friendly depending. It's a lot of crowd work for me too. It's just variety of act within stand up, I think, is a really big plus. Plus, you never get bored because we're always getting up and getting down and getting up and getting down because there's too many of us.
100%. I would actually wanted to say last minute comments is our website. Definitely, if you want to buy tickets, check out our website at DIYComedyTour.ca. Or you can follow us on social media as well as I wasn't sure if you wanted to apply that as well, but just in case, we've had it. Just want to make sure. I did an interview in the past, not with the DIY, with somebody else. They did not mention the show at all. So I'm like, it's drilled in my brain to mention it every time now. Whenever I do an interview.
Yeah, follow us at DIY Comedy Tour on Instagram, DIYComedyTour.ca. You can follow me on
Frank, any
Instagram,
final
Costa
comments?
Franks. It's the only thing I have.